Mental Breakdown Morning Show. I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson.
And I'm Dr. Richard Marshall.
Happy Thursday.
I told my daughter this morning, I can't believe it's Thursday. You know, we have these football games on Friday night because she's a Jew. It's like, it's
here
almost Friday again.
You know,
it's
like
Friday night all over again.
Yeah.
So, Groundhog Day. Wasn't there a movie with Bill Murray?
That was
Groundhog
great. Day. That was a great movie. Right. And
weeks are going by fast.
They are, and tomorrow's the last day of September. So,
can't believe it.
Today is September 29th, which, you know, it just means that the year's flying by, it seems. It's just...
And tomorrow's October the 1st. You want to read...
Saturday is October the 1st. Tomorrow is September 30th.
I'll wait till tomorrow.
So mention it tomorrow.
I'll mention it tomorrow. Remind me.
Because of the baseball player, or baseball commentator. Right? That's what you were going to talk about.
No. What
it
baseball
commentator?
Vince
was
Scully?
It was what he's going to talk
no,
about.
No, that's October the 2nd.
Right. But we're not...
That's
Sunday.
That's not what I'm talk about. No, so it's going to be a surprise. Okay. You'll have to wait until tomorrow.
I don't know how I feel about these kind of surprises.
Even you will have to wait until tomorrow. And it does involve you.
Now I'm really nervous.
Okay, so. But tomorrow, the last day of September. I'll save it until the last day of September. Okay.
All right, well, tonight, or today, not tonight,
well,
today,
that was a good Freudian slip because we're talking about sleep.
We are going to talk about sleep a little
so
bit.
So tonight was the context.
We talk about it. We talk about sleep every once in a while, but there was a couple of recent articles that came out that you came across that we thought would be kind of good to review as we're getting ready for, you know, within the next couple of weeks, time's going to change. We're going to gain an hour. It's going to be dark longer, and so we need to. This is a great time to be thinking about sleep because
well, we talk about, and we have said many times, no matter what else you do, especially with your children, but I think it applies to everybody. Eating, sleeping, and exercise.
Right.
It's like our version of the Trinity. You know, in Cajun cooking, you have the Trinity. Peppers, celery, and onions.
Oh.
Every meal starts with the Trinity. And so our version of the Trinity is sleep, exercise, and food and nutrition.
Okay. Right.
You have to do those things. You can't expect medication to do it. You can't expect therapy. Your job is to manage those three things. When any one of those is out of whack,
right,
it's very difficult to get your body into a healthy state. So we often talk about that trinity of sleep, nutrition, and exercise. And as I was reading through journals this past week, I ran into these recent studies.
Right.
There have been a number of recent studies on sleep. And I was particularly interested in this one because it comes out of two universities.
Right. So this is an article from Psychology Today, and I'll include the link in the show notes, that talks about, or it's called, Here's What a Bad Night's Sleep Really Does to Your Brain.
Right.
And of course, being brain guys, we like to, we're sort of drawn to those kinds of things. And you know, just cutting to the chase with it, not sleeping well affects your brain.
Right.
You know,
because a brain is an electrical organ.
Right.
I mean, you know, we don't typically think of it that way. We think of it as being a camera or a recorder or
right.
a storage facility. And it really isn't that. It's these wet neurons and there's a lot of electricity passing around the brain all day long. And you need sleep to kind of give it a rest.
Right.
You know, be like any electrical appliance if it ran continuously.
Right.
Or if it ran too fast, and our brain runs too fast typically during the day, you're going to wear it out. It's going to get hot, and it's going to short out.
Right.
So because of the level of activity and the expectations we have of the brain, you got to give it a rest.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. When I teach my graduate students just a smidge of neuroanatomy, we don't get to go into it very much, they're always fascinated to know that the brain is not just chemical, but it's electrical.
It's electrical.
And so it communicates in two different ways.
Right.
And you're right. We have to give it a break.
You know, if you were deprived of sleep for 3 days in a row, you'd end up having a seizure. I mean, the brain would short circuit.
The likelihood,
right?
Right.
And so something bad will happen if you don't get enough sleep. And the other, you know, most people know today that sleep occurs in cycles.
Right.
And what those cycles are doing is they're re-regulating the brain,
right,
putting it back into its normal rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken out of its normal rhythm during the day
right.
because of the demands we place on it. But then at night, it returns to that very normal rhythm.
Right.
Okay. And that's what we have to allow it to do.
Right.
By sleep deprivation interferes with that return.
Which is why, you know, those of you who may be familiar with doing evaluations for seizure disorders, we do sleep-deprived EEGs. Because when our brain is sleep-deprived, it's more likely to experience a seizure. So, right. So yes, this article is really interesting in that it comes, as you said, from a couple of really important university studies, right, looking at how the brain functions when there is a deprivation of sleep.
Right.
So, you know, our emphasis, mm-hmm, our repeated emphasis on the importance of sleep, you know, the need for getting enough sleep, whatever that enough sleep is for you. You know, I was listening to an interesting podcast last week, and mm-hmm, I don't think I mentioned it in a previous show, but I was listening to a podcast last week, and it was a circadian rhythm expert, mm-hmm, from Oxford University. So right. I think I did mention it, but he was talking about how, you know, you need to know, mm-hmm, what is the right amount of sleep for you, right, what your brain needs, because you're right, those cycles, and everybody's, those cycles that we go through the night, right, it varies a little bit from person to person.
And, you know, we see a number of teenagers who find it really difficult to get out of bed in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing, I'm not a sleep expert, but I'm assuming that the problem is that when it's time for them to wake up, they're, for some reason, in their deepest sleep cycle, right, because they didn't go to bed at the right time.
Right.
And so if you have a teenager, or if you as an adult, you may want to switch the time that you fall asleep,
right,
because the problem most likely is that instead of being in REM sleep where it's easy to wake you up,
right,
you're in your deepest sleep cycle.
When it's difficult.
And so if you think of those cycles as being, they're 90 minutes
cycles. Each.
Mm-hmm. So you may want to consider that your child, your teenager, is in a deep sleep,
right,
okay? Very difficult to arouse, very difficult to get back to a awake state.
Right.
And you may want to move...
Just shift it by about
30
minutes.
Not when they go to bed, when they go to sleep.
Right.
Okay, you have to think, when they go to sleep. And just use that 90-minute cycle as a gauge.
Right. So there's three broad clumps, mm-hmm, of where you are in the cycle. And so
right,
it's roughly 30 minutes. 30 minutes each.
Right.
And so,
yeah, so move it back.
Not exact,
if you move it back 30 minutes,
right,
or 60 minutes,
right,
you know that
you're going to be either in the lighter sleep or in the REM sleep, and
right,
so it may be easier to get,
mm-hmm,
up during that
time.
It'd
be easier to get up.
Yeah. So in light of that, you know, of course we were talking a lot about sleep, and then we came across this list. So this is another article.
Right. Because what she said, she is a physician, the woman who wrote this article.
What's her name? Randy Epstein.
Randy Epstein. She's a regular contributor to Psychology Today, and she talks about these topics of interest. And what she is emphasizing in this article, the aspect of the study that she reports on, is the importance of a good night's sleep as it relates to memory.
Right.
Okay. And she was saying that a sleep deprivation interferes with connections to a certain structure in the brain that makes new memories.
Yeah.
And we've known for years
that... One of our favorite structures,
right. And we've known for years that if kids do their homework and then they go to sleep, they consolidate those memories during sleep,
mm-hmm,
okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have sleep deprivation, you're not consolidating those memories.
Right.
And she brings up, in the article, she brings up a famous case in neurology, neurosurgery, and neuropsychology about a patient who had his... this brain structure was removed...
Right.
To prevent seizures, and he couldn't make new memories.
Right.
I mean, he was constantly living in the present, and he couldn't make new memories. And she says that sleep deprivation has a similar effect, right, not as drastic as surgery, but it has a similar effect on that same structure.
Right.
So she was talking mainly about the effects on memory.
Right.
Okay. We also know there are effects on behavior.
Right.
And another physician talked about the effects of sleep deprivation on behavior.
Right. Right. And of course that brain structure. That HM is, mm-hmm, is that case study that we're talking about with that is the hippocampus. And the hippocampus, for those of you who are, you know, like reading about memory and things like that, the hippocampus is also implicated in other conditions, mm-hmm, we know that affect memory, like Alzheimer's,
right,
and other forms of dementia and those kinds of things. So
if it makes new memories, you wouldn't be surprised to learn that that's the structure that gets damaged with Alzheimer's.
And it's so easy to remember.
Patients with Alzheimer's can't make new memories.
It's so easy to remember that the hippocampus has to do with memory, because if you ever saw a hippo on campus, you'd never forget it. That's how I teach the
we were doing
students.
So well.
So okay. The hippocampus. It's a good, and it's right there next to the amygdala. Man, right. If we could just do a neuroanatomy lesson, we need to do that.
Well, because the amygdala tells us what's dangerous. So right. We want to remember what's dangerous so that the right. structure that remembers things is right beside the structure that perceives fear.
And then right next to that is the olfactory. So that's why your memory for smell, that's why when you smell something immediately goes back to you and you're thinking, oh man, that smell, it just brings back all those memories.
There's an electrical cord for Bernie. I can unplug it and so we can move on.
That whole region of the brain is just so fascinating.
Fascinating stuff. But we see this connection. What I like about this article is once again, it establishes the biology behind sleep. So please don't underestimate the importance of sleep. Our grandparents were correct. In fact, there was a study done of Amish children who have bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. And those kids do better. They have fewer symptoms and less exaggerated symptoms. And one of the reasons is that they sleep differently than our kids. Right. They go to sleep when it gets dark and they get up when it gets light. And and so researchers who are conducting these studies on Amish children feel that sleep is the significant difference in those children.
Right. And there's, you know, when we think about some of the really significant disorders, even in adulthood, that are problematic, whether it's bipolar disorder, mainly mania associated with bipolar disorder, even schizophrenia, there's research that suggests, you know, one of your first lines of treatment besides medication is regulating sleep. Mm-hmm. If you have a bipolar patient and you can get them to sleep regularly and have a good night's sleep most nights, you significantly decrease the likelihood of a manic episode.
And conversely, if they don't get good sleep, it is very, very difficult for them to regulate to regulate their behavior and to regulate their emotional responses. As it is, you know, we always say a tired baby is a fussy baby.
Right.
A tired child is a fussy child. A tired teenager is a fussy teenager.
A tired parent.
Is a fussy parent. So this doesn't just apply to infants. If you don't get enough sleep, no matter what age you are, it's going to have an effect on your cognitive abilities, but it's also going to have an effect on your behavior and your emotions.
Right, right. So there was this other article that has these 11 reasons why it's so important for kids to get a good night's sleep. And, you know, it's everything from, you know, the memory stuff that we're talking about, how well they learn, their behavioral regulation, being able to maintain and meet expectations throughout the day. I like number 11, because number 11 was when your kids sleep well, parents sleep well.
Right. Everybody's well rested when the kids sleep well.
Yeah.
But what he talks about 11 reasons, but the two major reasons of why children should get a good night's sleep. One is memory, because that's when memory consolidation occurs.
And school performance goes along with that.
Right. And then and the other is behavior, because we know that kids with ADHD, for example, if they don't sleep well, they have a much rougher time the next day. When parents come in and say, well, frequently parents will come in and say, well, some days she's fine and other days it's like horrible, it probably is because they didn't get a restorative sleep the night before.
Right.
So we can't emphasize enough how important sleep is. And now we have even additional evidence, recent evidence, of the biological mechanisms underlying a good night's sleep. So
yeah, absolutely.
Do your work on sleep. You know, we talk about diet, we talk about exercise, but keep sleep on the list too.
Definitely. So, all right. So think about that for tonight.
Right.
You know, when you're going to bed tonight, think about, you know, how do you feel in the morning? And if it's really difficult for you to get up with your alarm in the morning, shift your bedtime and sleep time just a little bit, you know, 30 minutes earlier, just to see if that helps you get up a little bit easier in the morning.
Right.
That would be a great little bit of advice for this evening.
That would be a good thing to put on your list of things to do.
And if you try it and it works, let us know.
We'd love to hear
from you and know, you know, that some of these things are working for you. And then, of course, when we hear from you guys that, hey, man, this was really effective, and we share that, then other people will say, oh, well, you know, if it worked for them, maybe it'll work for us too.
You can share that with others.
Yeah.
So let us know.
All right. Well, have a great day.
We don't match very well.
One last thing about the hippocampus and the amygdala. If you look at that whole limbic system, it's shaped like a Klingon bird of prey from Star Trek. Just saying. I don't know.
And hippocampus means seahorse.
It does look a little bit,
You have to see it from the inside in order to see that.
We'll stop now. It's a beautiful structure.
We'll stop now and wish you a good day. I'll take care of it.
We can keep talking about it.
We can keep it. We will someday. We'll talk about the day devoted to the hippocampus. How would that be?
Great. That'd be great.
It does a lot.
And that's the only region of the brain that they say regenerates neurons on its own. That was a study done in the last couple of years. The only brain region that regenerates.
It's also destroyed with the rabies virus.
Bad news. Okay. So we have the pros and cons of the hippocampus.
So it must be nearing the end of the week. We're turning to seed. You guys have a great day.
Have a fantastic day, and we will see you bright and early tomorrow morning. All right?
Bye.
Bye-bye.